Hello and welcome back to the Seafood Industry Safety Initiative set of podcasts. Welcome to Series 2, which is focused on the SeaSafe Initiative. Thanks for joining me. I appreciate your time, and in particular, I appreciate the time of the five guests that spoke with me regarding the SeaSafe Initiative. So I'd like to thank Alex Ogg, Clayton Nelson, Steve Ayres, Michael O'Brien, and John Atkinson. Thanks again for your time. Hope you enjoy the podcast, and over to our first podcast guest, Alex Ogg, who is the chair of the SeaSafe Initiative and is also the chief executive officer of the Western Australian Fishing Industry Council. Over to Alex.
Pleasure to be with you today. How are you doing?
Living the dream here in Brisbane. Got a couple of questions for you around SeaSafe program. So I'll start with the first one being, why is WAFIC involved with SeaSafe, mate?
Thanks, Eric. And I'll just say, mate, it's great to be have a chance to discuss something other than COVID-19, which has been the focus of our world the last few weeks. To talk about WAFIC's involvement with SeaSafe, I need to make something perfectly clear, and it's not necessarily pretty. But commercial fishing as an industry has been viewed forever as inherently risky, and that's based on working in the unpredictable marine environment. And we see this risk reflected in the historic records of vessel sinkings and other incidents at sea, all of which lead to a rather unenviable track record in the industrial safety space, to say the least. Now, this isn't something that we should be proud of, but I guess over decades, fishers have developed an attitude or a certain amount of complacency around the risk of getting on a vessel and going out to sea to provide fish. But given this is a starting point, there's really a lot of room for improvement of practices and to shift that safety culture and mindset across our industry, more or less in the same way that the resource sectors had to do over recent decades. But we've got a fair job ahead of us in doing that. WAFIC, as a state-based agency, shares these concerns over vessel safety with our state and territory counterparts. And collectively, we've turned our head into that space to become safety advocates for this cultural change that's necessary. And by doing that, we're setting goals for improving both awareness across our members and reducing the long-term reportable incidents across our fishing fleets. So, Eric, that's a long-winded introduction to the question, but in answer to your question, raising awareness and targeting bespoke training, operational procedures, and checkpoints to help educate both new and existing crew members on our vessels to instill those safety practices, which reduce the risk of accidents over the longer term, is absolutely the name of the game for this project, Project SeaSafe. That explains WAFIC's interest as the project administrator and my interest as an involvement as the chair of the project steering committee. And its safety of sea is something that's been elevated to our national peak body, Seafood Industry Australia, as one of its primary objectives and is part of that important pledge, which was initiated last year. And that subject is to value our people, to look after them, and to keep them safe. So our involvement is clear demonstration of WAFIC support for both the project and the pledge, the SIA pledge, and it represents our genuine interest in improving safety performance in the fishing fleet, not just in WA, but across Australia.
That's a great introduction. So can I ask, just to unpack a bit more, what do you see from a WAFIC perspective is the value in SeaSafe for industry, mate? So you've made some connections to what we're doing at the national level, but let's look at it from a Western Australian point of view. What's in it for the WA fishing industry that then obviously would translate to the rest of the country?
Well, I guess, Eric, it's important to note that the concept for SeaSafe came from industry itself, and it came from industry in Western Australia in particular. That might have something to do with its success and the uptake in its early stages today. So funding for the project was initially pledged by industry members, and we saw very quickly FRDC answer the call and provide a larger bucket of funding and contributions to enable, you know, really an end-to-end solution for accessible safety training across the fishing industry in Western Australia. So the SeaSafe initiative, I think it's in its third year of a three-year project at the moment, and it follows closely on a number of tragic sinkings and accidents in recent years across our industry. And a number of those have regrettably resulted in multiple losses of life. So I guess if I had to crystallize one of the most important aspects of this project is that it asks fishers themselves to reflect on the question, What if you don't come home? And that's been a critical part of the campaign. And I guess the success of this initiative is in its ability to assist in changing that mindset of complacency over safety and overcome some of the stereotypes associated with a mindset-like regulatory approach. By internalizing that message across the individual fishers and to try to standardize and normalize the training procedures that are given to new and existing industry members across a company or a fishery.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense and why it's being driven the way that it's being driven. So thank you for that, Alex. So final question, how does WAFIC see SeaSafe evolving into the future?
Well, there's a couple of things that might influence that, Eric. First, I guess, is the continuation of the uptake of the SeaSafe initiative across broader swatches of industry. I guess my role in leading the steering committee is to try to provide the project manager, Steve Ayers, who's doing a brilliant job, both some oversight and some guidance and support, but most importantly, bringing industry perspective and knowledge to the table and using that perspective from industry to identify the training needs and identify fisheries or fishing groups that can benefit from this training. So Steve, in his own right, has been very proactive in developing his own market, but it's to do this on a national basis is going to take more time and effort and some more funding. So a major recent accomplishment we've seen is the agreement by the Western Rock Lobster Council to support SeaSafe. Now, rock lobster fishery here represents several hundred fishers along our WA coastline, a couple of hundred vessels, and is WA our largest fishery. And the council is now planning to make SeaSafe a training available to all of its skippers and members. And they're working closely with Steve to develop bespoke training modules to support that industry and their members. So they're looking at a number of fishery specific modules, including safe handling of pots on deck, safe hauling practices, and a response when gear is fouled on the seabed, that sort of thing. Including, you know, safe handling procedures for dangerous animals such as sea snakes. What we'd like to see is this type of fishery-wide approach and adoption roll across broad sectors and other jurisdictions around Australia. To do that, we'd like to see that continued support from our state and territory counterparts, the other seafood industry bodies, and also we're going to require another round of funding from FRDC, and there's a project extension proposal before the FRDC at the moment. We're very hopeful that they see the merit in continuing a funding to allow a transition. So it was never envisaged that SeaSafe would just remain as a project and then disappear. Again, this ultimate success is going to involve a transition to a self-perpetuating model under a fee-for-service type proposal. But to do that, it needs to be more widespread. It needs to gain that internal momentum so that it can be delivered across the majority of our industry.
Alex, appreciate your time and thank you for the background from a WAFIC perspective on what's happening with SeaSafe. And look, thank you for the work that you've been putting in. And for those listening, I've been speaking with Alex Ogg, CEO of WAFIC and also the chair of the steering committee for SeaSafe. Alex, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Eric. My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, everyone, for listening, and I'll catch you all on the next podcast.
Hope you enjoyed that first podcast with Alex Ogg. Our second podcast guest is Clayton Nelson. Clayton is the General Manager for Policy and External Relations with Austral Fisheries. Hope you enjoyed this podcast. Over to Clayton.
By way of background to today's guest, he started with Tiger Fisheries as part of his industry development experience, and he's been in industry for 40 years. He developed a boutique scallop business, was instrumental in getting the ABC Delicious Award for Producer of the Year in 2013. Can I welcome to the podcast Clayton Nelson, who is the General Manager for Policy and External Affairs with Austral Fisheries. How are you, Clayton?
Good, Eric. Thanks very much. Thanks for the introduction and the invitation to participate.
No, I appreciate your time, and I know you're busy, and we're all busy in this new world of coronavirus. So let's get to the podcast questions if we can, Clayton. So the first one is, can you tell us about the Austral experience with the incident that changed how Austral Fisheries look at safety?
The tragic event that, I guess, brought us to the realisation that we weren't as good as we thought we were, or we had gaps in our processes and systems, was the tragic electrocution of Ryan Donoghue in June 2013. That had a very deep effect on everyone in Austral Fisheries, from the CEO down to the crew that were on the vessel, to the extended staff around around our business. That was a death that could have been avoided, and Austral took it very personally. That and as we should, you know, we needed to do something about this. We needed to look at our systems. We needed to look at how we made sure this would never ever happen again in our business. And that thinking kind of started then, well, how can we make a difference while we're doing this? Because we kind of thought that if there was gaps in training, there was gaps in some of the grandfathering clauses, there was gaps in who was responsible in cross-border relationships and jurisdictions. So it opened up a lot of questions under WorkSafe legislation, under AMPSA legislation, under training that was provided to crews, and under grandfathering clauses for vessels. So it wasn't as simple as saying, gee, we've got this tragic death, but if we'd simply done this, it would have been prevented. There was a whole host of things that sat behind it that needed to be addressed. So that was the incident, and it's now 2020, and we're still living it. We still feel that pain of that young man's death, and continually strive to improve the safety systems on board our vessels within our fishery and through Project SeaSafe around the coast of Australia.
Just a follow-up question or two, just to unpack what you just said there a little bit. The first one's around what some people would call a safety culture. What do you think that looks like now?
We took safety seriously anyway, but we weren't totally all over it. And the industry we work in, as you would know, Eric, attracts, you know, to be a good fisherman, you tend to have a little bit of rogue about you, a bit of rebel, you take a risk. We attract, as a general comment into the Australian fishing industry, we attract a group of people that they want to have a go, and they want an adventure. They want to, they don't necessarily fit into the normal box that society wants them to fit into, but they really want to have a crack at something wild and adventurous, and that's what the fishing industry is. That's always been hard to impose the type of regulation and the safety culture that, for example, comes out of the offshore industry. We certainly were lacking in a culture of safety, I think. We didn't live it and breathe it, and I think now we do. We do live and breathe safety to the point where it doesn't restrict our operations. It's been quite an interesting process to develop that culture that, you know, we still celebrate the hunter-gatherer mentality that goes in our industry, but we celebrate the people that who join that hunter and gathering with a really good safety culture and a safety record. So it's an interesting place to be, to try and blend those two, but I'm not saying we've got it fixed, but it's a continual process.
Can I move to asking about your learning management system and how that began in Austral? And for the sake of those listening to the podcast, can you just define what a learning management system is?
Learning management system that we developed internally was, it's very similar to a standard online induction program that you would find if you wanted to enter a port authority or a workplace. So it's not unique in that. But what we tried to do was to adapt it to our type of workplace environment. Now, we have crews coming from all over Australia. Sometimes they don't fit neatly into the start of the season where they go through an induction process with, you know, two or three days of formalities and training, which we do the start of every season in Cairns or Darwin, wherever our vessels are based at the time. So we tried to adapt it so it was more online, so it could be used on a mobile device. So if we had, for example, if we had a deckie that had to, or a skipper or a mate or an engineer that needed to get to Darwin from Melbourne to meet a vessel. So prior to that person arriving at that vessel, they would have undertaken a online learning management. They would have been put through this learning management system that went through all the relevant safety points and the risk matrix of joining one of our vessels, quite specific about what the job entailed. That has made a lot of difference to the way we operate because it provides that flexibility. It also provides a unique way that we can engage with our crew. We can have their record of training held in an administrative capacity at Austral. We can update their training records autonomously from our office. We can look at what they were strong at and what they were weak at, and we can provide training around that. So it's provided that degree of flexibility that really really helps us in that workplace. And since then, we've developed that further into another couple of modules that allow us to manage our safety management systems, our workplace incidences, port calls, all through an app on either a tablet or a telephone, so or a mobile phone. So we're lucky that we've got a couple of good folk in our business that have both been to sea. They understand what can be done and what can't be done, and they provide that sound advice to the app developer and the learning management system moderator to make sure that it's relevant information and it's truth tested at all times. So
that's fantastic. So let's, if we can, Clayton, move on to what's been the reaction and response, I guess, from your skipper and your skippers and your crew to the LMS?
Yeah, that's a pretty interesting question, really, because you talk about safety culture. When there's one thing most fishermen hate is paperwork, and we've always had, as we've developed our safety culture, these reams and reams of paper, whether it be safety management systems or inductions, that need to be filled out, that need to be submitted, and the workload on skippers and crews was just becoming, it was huge, and it met a lot of resistance. So by developing this online tool, it actually met some of the expectations of the people that we like to work for us, anywhere between 18 years of age and 40 or 45. Our oldest skipper is early 60s, but even he's kind of risen to the challenge. But it's provided an opportunity to be flexible, which a lot of these guys like. They can do it online, they can do it on a mobile device. It means they don't have to sit down and fill out reams of paperwork with a pen. A lot of it is quite visual, so the visual stuff meets the standard that we like to have on our skippers and crews, or within the skippers and crews culture. So they all take ownership. I know the acceptance of all our crews at the start of the season is really, really good, and it's pleasing to see that LMS through Project SeaSafe and Steve Ayres as the program manager has been adopted by a number of other companies around Australia. The Australian Council of Prawn Fisheries has just adopted it for most of the northern prawn fishery vessels, so that's been pretty instrumental. A lot of the companies and single boat operators in the northern prawn are using it. We've got tuna companies in South Australia, the Western Australian Rock Lobster Council are developing modules for their fishery. So it's work in progress, but I think it's now becoming accepted as a go-to place, and a go-to tool for managing some of the safety issues within the industry. And COVID-19 has really set the cat among the pigeons prior to season start for a lot of fisheries, where we couldn't have people gathering in a room to do inductions. The ability to have an online tool where we could separate all these folk and let them do it at their leisure, having social separation in place and sometimes even 14-day isolation, was brilliant. So, there is a time and a place where these things become quite relevant, and this year was one of them.
Clayton, thank you for your time today. Appreciate it, mate.
No worries, Eric. It's been a pleasure. I guess as a last comment, that is a good thing for industry. It's a great thing for industry to lift the safety culture. I think if the word can be spread, and at the end of the day, we owe it to ourselves, and we owe it to the parents of the young people we bring into our industry to make sure that they come on board our vessels, they develop a career, and they go home safe.
Thank you for that. I appreciate that. That's a great way to end the podcast. Thanks again for your time, and I'll catch you all on the next podcast.
The next podcast guest is Steve Ayres, who brings many decades of experience in the seafood industry. His most recent roles are as Director of Smart Fishing Consulting. He was formerly a research scientist looking at fishing technology and fish behaviour in the Gulf of Maine Research Institute in the United States, and is currently the project lead for the SeaSafe initiative. Again, I'd like to thank Steve for his time. The next couple of podcasts are broken up into two elements, the first being the introduction of SeaSafe into Austral fisheries, and the second is an introduction to the SeaSafe modules themselves and what you might expect undertaking the SeaSafe program. Thanks again for listening, and I'll hand over to Steve.
Austral Fisheries is a company based in West Australia. They run about 10 trawlers in the Northern Prawn Fishery, which is Gulf Carp material in the top end of Northern Territory. And about 5 years ago, maybe a little bit longer now, quite tragically, one of their deckhands electrocuted himself and didn't survive. So that struck the company particularly hard. And basically, long story short, what happened thereafter was that Austral Fisheries decided to improve or contribute to improving safety performance and awareness in the Australian fishing industry. And they did that by, first of all, developing what's known as a learning management system, which is a suite of electronic or online safety training modules, which they deliver to their own crews these days. And then they contributed a sizable chunk of change to contribute to what's now known as the SeaSafe project. So as a result of that fatality, Austral stepped forward and has contributed to the SeaSafe project. Funds that they contributed were matched by the Fisheries Research and Development Corporation, or FRDC for short. And when that occurred, we had a project. I was fortunate enough to get the role of principal investigator to lead that project. In addition to the funds from Austral and FRDC, the Australian Maritime Safety Authority soon thereafter contributed a sizable chunk of change. And we've now been running, as I say, for 2 years. I've developed a large suite of training modules, which are accessed online. And we're really trying to engage with the fishing industry fundamentally to improve safety performance.
Okay, so a little bit to unpack there, Steve. I can ask a couple of questions of you. So, and this isn't to detract from what Austral's done, obviously, and all commercial fishing businesses need to be thinking about safety at sea. My question would be, do you think at the time, not just from an Austral point of view, but from an industry-wide perspective, that there was issues around the safety culture when it comes to this industry?
Well, I think all industries have room for improvement, and you know, the fishing industry is one of them. You know, I worked in the Northern Prawn Fishery in the early 80s. I remember distinctly my time at sea. I certainly had my fair share of accidents and injuries, you know, including going overboard once with the fishing gear, falling between two boats one night, and sundry other accidents. And I also recall at the time that, you know, it took me months on board my first boat before I realised that there was a waterproof container that had flares and other safety at sea equipment. And I never once received any training in terms of how to put on a life jacket, how to deploy the life raft, what to do if there was a fire on board, if there was a man overboard, what to do. So in my half dozen or so years of fishing in that part of the world and elsewhere, safety training was something that just didn't occur. Now that's really turned around, and the industry has really upped its game in that regard. And so, you know, on a fishing boat these days, there are regular safety drills, musters, all the man overboard, the fire, you know, how to put out a fire on the boat, those sorts of things. There's regular training in that. And so there has been, in the 30-odd years since I was on the water, a big improvement in the fishing industry. But like I say, there's always room to improve. And, you know, sadly, we still have fatalities at sea. The last few years have been particularly tragic, with several boats capsizing and most crew losing their lives. So there are still things that we can try to do to improve safety. Although it should also be pointed out, sometimes things just happen, and even the best laid plans are inadequate. And, you know, working on the water is a unforgiving environment, and sometimes stuff just happens, and no matter how much training you have, it still happens. It's just an unfortunate fact of life. But certainly, you know, we can do what we can to raise awareness, to prepare people as best as possible. And that's what CSAFE's all about.
Excellent. Thanks, Steve. So let's get on to a bit of unpacking of some of what's been discussed so far. Can you give me a bit of a definition background to what CSAFE is?
Well, so CSAFE is the name given to this project, which really has two functions. And one is to raise awareness, and the other is to provide safety training. So raising awareness, we do that by attending workshops, giving industry workshops, giving presentations, producing flyers and brochures and things like that. We've produced several, I think, very hard-hitting, emotionally charged videos based on the theme, "What if you don't come home?" And the idea there being to really make people think when they're working on the water what the implications of their actions might be. If they don't come home, who's going to be left behind? How are their loved ones and friends going to cope in their absence? So raising awareness is a core part of CSAFE. The other part is the actual training, and that's the learning management system that I spoke of earlier. Really, that's a fancy name for a number of short online safety training modules, which run for about 4 or 5 minutes in length, and they cover a whole manner of topics, from emergency response to personal safety to boat safety to operational safety. And by doing this training, fishers are, if they haven't received this training before, they're obviously getting it for the first time, so we're raising awareness and hopefully improving their performance on the boat. And if they're getting it again, it acts as a great refresher training. It just reminds them of some of the things they need to be on the lookout for and some of the things they need to be doing to act safely on the boat.
So, Steve, you've sort of kind of covered my next question, which was around how is CSAFE delivered. In terms of that delivery methodology, can people do the modules basically anywhere?
Yes, they can. And that's one of the great things about CSAFE is that it's highly flexible and adaptable. So to take a step back, I've produced a large suite of short training modules. So these are modules which initially were based off the modules that Austral produced. I then removed Austral logos and de-emphasized some things and re-emphasized others and certainly made the modules basically my own, I guess, with a very strong CSAFE flavour. They're very short, they're very brief, they're to the point. They don't cover everything that's possible to be covered, because otherwise we'd be looking at modules that are much longer. So we have this suite of modules, each is about 4 or 5 minutes long, and the way to access them is usually online, and so that's a pretty simple process. Basically what happens is the boat owner or skipper of the boat informs me of the modules that they want their crew to complete. If he wants each crew member to do them independently, then what I need is the email address of each crew member. And when I have those email addresses, I go to the software that I'm using and I then email each individual the modules via the software. The individuals receive this email, they click on the link, they then do the modules, and the modules are structured in a way that the boat owner or skipper has instructed me to present. So it's pretty straightforward. And then the crew member just go through each of the modules. They do the questions at the end of each. If they get all the answers correct, they then go on to the next module. And what's important here is that not only is the person, by answering the questions, demonstrating their comprehension of the material, but the answers are then sent to me, and I then redirect them to the boat owner or skipper. So the boat owner or skipper now has a record of completion, and that demonstrates that boat owner or skipper is meeting their duty of care requirements, or at least contributing to their duty of care requirements to that crew member. And so, there's a win-win outcome here, both for the boat owner or skipper and for the crew. So that's one of the ways of doing it. The other way is that if there's a large group of crew, let's say it's pre-fishing season and they're gathered at the port, I can turn up and I can show the modules one by one, project them on a large screen, and everybody completes the modules on a sheet of paper, writing the answers themselves. And then at the end of each module, when they've had a chance to answer the questions, we go through and make sure that they know which are the right answers or not. They put their name and the boat on that sheet of paper, they give it to me, or give it to the boat owner or skipper, and again, that person's now got a record that the modules have been completed, and the boat owner or skipper knows that, yes, that person, John Smith, whoever it may be, has completed training. So that's the second option. An interesting option that we've just started to play with, and it's been very successful, is whereby the boat owner or skipper downloads the modules on a tablet. And you know, the first two options that I've presented to you basically require internet access to be available. If you're going out to sea and there's no internet, providing the modules are downloaded on a tablet beforehand, you can then go to sea and the modules can be completed at sea without internet access. And when you come back to shore and the internet access is regained, the last person that completed the modules, their records, their answers are then uploaded to me, and the process, you know, I give it to the boat owner or skipper. So we've now got a situation whereby you can do it both online or offline. And even offline, if you've downloaded them on a tablet, you can then present them on a computer screen or a TV screen on the boat, and everybody can do them as a group there as well. So we really do have a very flexible way of accessing the modules.
Yeah, it sounds like it, Steve. Thanks for that. So final part of this particular podcast, mate, is to talk about some companies that are already using SeaSafe and how they're doing it.
Yep. So I think it's fair to say that the first company to use the SeaSafe modules was Australia-based Seafoods, which are based in Darwin. They run four fish trawlers out of Darwin, and they really jumped at the opportunity to use the modules. And they were the first company also to want to do the training with the entire crew in the company office, and the operations manager, he delivers the training, and at the end of the training he knows that everybody on that boat has received the same training, and they all have the same, but at least the same basic level of knowledge before they leave the office and go back on the boat. So Australia-based Seafoods has been a great supporter of the project, the first and certainly the first company to start, and they've also started to use the tablet option as well, which is just great. And you know, they go out of the Northwest Shelf, and you know, they often lose internet access. And so with the tablets, they can do the training. There's no reason why they can't do the training when they're out at sea. A number of companies from the Northern Prawn Fishery, WA Seafoods, Ausfish, Raptors and Sons, for example, are engaged in the modules in one way, shape or form, usually training pre-season. So they bring everybody together, do it in a classroom setting. Although one company is now they have the modules sort of up their sleeve, so to speak. And so if they have to bring in new crew at short notice this season, they can ask me to email the modules to that person and they can complete the training before they even arrive at the boat. In West Australia, there's been a couple of companies, prawn fishing companies over there that have engaged in the program. MG Kalis, for example, interestingly, they have a crew that sometimes come from the Philippines, and we trained them up before they left the Philippines and arrived in Australia about 6 months or so ago. So we can even train up international crew before they arrive on our shores. There's been a couple of other companies that have engaged in the program, and there's certainly been a lot of interest shown, but they're still working out how to engage. And independent operators, it's been challenging getting to them, making them aware of the program. And some are engaging the program. Some are actually using the tablets as we speak. And so it's great to see some of the independents also engaging the program. And I guess the final thing to say on that score is that, you know, the Australian Council of Prawn Fisheries and the Western Rock Lobster Council have both contributed funds to the program, and that's enabled me to develop some fishery-specific modules, and they're being, in effect, gifted to all fishers in those respective fishing groups. So, you know, I can gift these modules to anyone in the prawn industry, and from the Western Rock Lobster Council, any of the modules that we've produced for them can be gifted to anyone that's engaged in the Western Rock Lobster Council.
That's fantastic, Steve. Look, that's a good introduction and overview.
In the first podcast, we talked about Austral's experience with SeaSafe, the SeaSafe program in general, and the different delivery modes that you've got for it, which gives some flexibility to those that want to engage with the program and those that have taken the program up. So I'd like to get a bit more specific, if we can, about the modules that are there. So from an introductory point of view, for someone who's never been involved with SeaSafe, what are the kinds of modules we might be expecting to undertake, and how are they linked together, mate?
So I guess just to recap, I mean, the modules each run for generally about 4 or 5 minutes, and there's a 4 or 5 questions at the end. Pretty simple yes, no, true, false, or multiple choice questions. So what I've done over a period of time is built this sort of suite or package of modules and then grouped them by common theme. So, for example, if somebody wanted to engage in the entire program, the normal approach or the logical approach would be that they would get an introductory module that basically just tells them what to expect, what's coming down the track. There is 3 risk assessment modules. These modules talk about things such as job safety analysis, hierarchy of controls, and risk matrix, which sound a little bit complex, but basically what they're talking about is you stop, you think before you act. You know, you pause, you consider the safety implications, and then you go ahead and do what you got to do. If you need to make some change, improve the safety environment before you act, then you so do so. So that's really just a systematic way of thinking about safety. But bearing in mind that often you have to make decisions very quickly, and certainly, you know, we appreciate that. So it's not like you sort of stop and pause for 5 minutes before you act. You know, you've got to be able to do things very quickly. And that's what this is really about, the risk assessment modules. And there's some emergency procedures, things such as man overboard, fire on board, abandoned ship, those sorts of things. There's a suite of personal safety modules, which cover things such as personal hygiene, manual handling, hand safety, managing noise hazards, personal flotation devices, sun protection, mental health at sea, fatigue awareness, etc. There's a suite of operational safety modules which apply pretty much to all boats, for things such as electrical safety, refueling, confined spaces, stability, working in severe weather. And then depending on the fishery, there's a suite of operational safety modules that are specific to that fishery. So by way of example, I mentioned in the last podcast, the Australian Council of Prawn Fisheries had funded me to produce some fishery-specific modules. So I've now produced about 8 or 9 modules related to operational safety on a prawn trawler, such as catch processing safety, hazardous animals, swinging booms and fishing gear in and out, hookup response, try net safety, dinghy safety, and those sorts of things. Again, there's about 42 modules now. In most instances, we would go to the boat owner or the skipper and say, okay, here's the list. What do you want your people to be trained in or to receive training in? They would tell me, they might say, look, we like the whole package. Over a period of time, we'll run through all of them. Or they might say, look, we're going to cherry pick some modules. This is the order we'd like them delivered in. Can you set that up? And yes, I can. I set it up and then away we go.
So with the modules, Steve, and thank you for sharing that give a good overview of what the modules are. If you wanted to get really specific with your safety management plan in your business or across a number of businesses, can you tailor the program that way? Is that how this has been designed to be implemented if you want to tailor it to specific needs in your business?
Yeah, you raise a really good point, a really good question. You have to remember that these modules are short, sharp and to the point. So they give an introduction to the safety. I don't profess they cover all circumstances that an individual might find themselves in. There's only so much you can do in a short period of time. They are designed to complement any of the training that happens on the boat. So all boats now, there should be safety inductions on a periodic basis. So we complement those. And then I think you might have been sort of alluding to safety management systems. And certainly this does align very closely with that requirement. I mean, there is a requirement embedded in the safety management system to develop risk registers or a risk profile on the boat to identify where the risks and hazards are and to identify remedial action. There's a requirement to carry out periodic inductions. So you can see that the SeaSafe does contribute to that requirement. And so it sits nicely with the safety management system, if you like, but it also sits on its own. So, you know, if you just decide that you want to refresh people because you decide now is the time to do a refresh, we can set you up very quickly, set your crew up very quickly, and you can do that.
How is the program linking in with industry representative groups at this stage, or is that an ongoing discussion, mate?
Well, it's always ongoing. I guess, again, we can use the Australian Council of Prawn Fisheries as a great example. We've done the same thing with the Western Rock Lobster Council. You know, they have access to the suite of general modules, and in the very near future, we hope to be building fishery-specific modules, and, you know, they're driving that need. So, you know, they're two very large industry bodies, of course, that we've been working with. And, you know, I guess through other industry, but West Australian Fishing Industry Council, for example, you know, their role here is to provide administrative support and to champion the project. You know, we're also working with AMSA in terms of them vouching or verifying the material in the modules is accurate. Again, given that we're only sort of touching the surface on some topics, given they're only 4 or 5 minutes long. And in my travels, you know, I try to get to other industry bodies and other industry groups. I've been around much of the country over the past 2 years, attending various industry meetings and saying, look, here is this program. This is what it can do. Here is how you can engage in it. And a very common question, of course, is what is the cost? And I haven't mentioned that yet, but basically at this point in time, we can deliver this training at no cost to the individual. So, you know, it really is, in my mind, a highly attractive, highly flexible and relevant program. And, you know, even better, it comes at no cost.
Thanks for your time again. And I was wondering, in the descriptions of this and the previous podcast, is there any information we can give to those listening if they want to learn more?
Yes, there is. So, first of all, I have a website, and the website is www.seasafe.com.au. And just to be clear, Seasafe is S-E-S-A-F-E. So we have that website. And on that website is, you know, a great introduction to Seasafe. You can get access to some of the emotionally charged videos that I spoke of during the last podcast. And there's other information. And there's also information, there's also records of coronial inquiries in fatalities on the water in the fishing industry over the past decade or so. And then finally, if people want to contact me, they can email me at seayrs, that's S-E-A-Y-R-S, at seasafe.com.au. And again, Seasafe is S-E-S-A-F-E. So seayrs at seasafe.com.au.
Those listening, I've been talking to Steve Ayres, and we've been talking the Seasafe program. Again, thank you for listening, and thanks for your time, Steve.
It was a pleasure. Glad to have had the opportunity to talk about my project.
That was Steve Ayres, and again, thank you to Steve for his time and a fantastic overview of the Seasafe initiative. Our next podcast guest is Michael O'Brien. Michael is the General Manager of Australia Bay Seafoods. I spoke with Michael about the Seasafe initiative. Again, thanks for your time, and over to Michael.
Michael, I wanted to talk to you about the Seasafe program. So can I start with the first question? What appealed to you about the Seasafe training, mate?
The most important thing for me was that we had a training program in that we were doing, but I didn't have the videos and the background to go with it. So instead of me standing in front of the crews and going over it line by line on our policies and our SMS manuals, and the thing that I liked about Seasafe was that it allowed me to put it together where everyone could sit down, go through it. We actually did it in a group form at the beginning, and it allowed us to make sure that everybody was understanding what our policies were and the safety issues on the boat. So we've been very excited with the way it's worked with our crews. It's certainly has given them something that they've been able to sign on to, and currently now we've actually taken it a step further. Now we've been using it for nearly 2 years, where, as I said, we were doing it in a office format with a group of 6 to 8 people. Now we've actually moved to the next stage, and that's we now have it in iPad form on board the vessels. So each vessel has its own iPad, and that iPad has got the SeaSafe program downloaded onto it. So we can actually do it at sea now outside the network system. So each crew member, while at sea, is actually doing it. We've brought in a policy now that we have all our vessels do it twice a year, once in January and once in August. Whether you did it the first time or not, it's compulsory that you do it twice. And the skipper signs off and lets us know through our email system that each of the crew members has done it. So some of them do it together and go through and do the answer at the end of each module. But the big game changer for me has been putting it on an iPad and being able to do it at sea while you're actually working, and we don't need the internet to be able to use it. So it's a real hands-on tool.
Thanks, Michael. And by way of that explanation, you've kind of answered the second question, was how are you currently using the SeaSafe program, which is fine, because I can ask you a bit of a follow-up question to both those, I guess, unpacking things a little. You say that you make it mandatory at least twice a year. Does that, my first question, I guess, is that part of the safety culture that you're trying to build and or maintain in the current business? And two, is that part of stepping up, I guess, to improve your safety culture in the organisation? I'm just thinking from an Australia-based seafoods perspective.
Yeah, no, it's all about changing the culture. It's something that we needed to address as a company. And when your boats work, you know, week in, week out, it's very hard to establish a training schedule for when everyone's going to be together. So this has really allowed me to ram home that that we're serious about our safety culture. And it really is the feedback from the crews and the skippers has been really good, actually, because they now feel more involved with it. We also have another program that we're running that where we do our safety meetings, and if anything comes up, we also have a communication system that lets us pass it from boat to boat now. So we've really stepped up from where we first started using SeaSafe, and now the other electronic programs that we're attaching to it, being a program called a Miracle App, it has really started to tick off all the boxes from the marine safety side, but also that culture of everybody getting involved and taking ownership.
Yeah, that makes sense. And it's I guess, part of the journey with this and starting to get the message out about what does better safety culture looks like. This, you know, what you're doing is an example of it. I would assume that there's different challenges that the program is going to have to address when it comes to individual operator businesses, so not your more corporately structured organizations. Does that ring true for you?
Oh yeah, to a degree, but the beauty of SeaSafe is that it can be the module or the package that you decide to use. You can go through the packages or the modules and select what's more related to your industry or to your boat if you're a one boat owner. I actually think that SeaSafe is a greater tool for the independent than it is for a corporate. So
oh sure, and that's great to hear. And so why I ask that is one of the bits of feedback that I've had from at least people I know in a Queensland context when it comes to programs like, not like SeaSafe, but programs around safety, is that there seems to be, there used to be, I'm not claiming that is the same thing that is happening now, but almost like it's an off-the-shelf approach and it's a one-size-fits-all. And what some of the feedback's been is maybe you need to tailor these things. So if SeaSafe can be tailored in that way, I guess there's no... You know, there's no argument to say no, we shouldn't at least give this a go in terms of trying to improve that safety culture.
Without a doubt, but also the beauty of SeaSafe is that it's a growing project, which allows you to, if you want to get SeaSafe involved in doing short movies on your boats for different parts of the safety training that you don't think their modules cover, you can do that. Steve is more than happy to work with you to create the modules to suit what you need. And that's the beauty of the SeaSafe system, is that you have a group of people there that are really keen to assist and to build it to suit you or the industry that you're in.
Yeah, appreciate that, Michael. So here's the last question. Again, this is back to Australia-based seafood. Is, have you had any feedback from your skippers and crew about SeaSafe?
Yeah, the one of the first things that I, when I put it on an iPad and I went and sat on the wharf with one of the skippers and the mates, and we sat there on the wharf and went through the whole program and what we needed to do, and everyone just said it's so good to be in a classroom where you're actually out there in the field working. So that was really noticeable, that everybody was really keen that it could be done in the workplace and while you're at sea, because it's then when it's the most important is when you're out there working. So they were really keen that way, that they now were able to do it on the boat in either themselves or with a group. So, you know, all the feedback that I've had from SeaSafe is really good. Plus, they don't have to listen to me as much. So
that's a real problem. Yeah, sure, Michael. Okay, look, thank you again for your time. Again, I appreciate your commitment to getting the message out there. So for those listening, I've been speaking with Michael O'Brien, the GM of Australian Bay Seafoods. Again, Michael, thank you for your time.
No worries at all, Eric. And any time anything new pops up, I'll let you know, and we'll be happy to have a chat about it.
No worries. For those listening, this has been the Seafood Industry Safety Initiative set of podcasts. My name is Eric Perez. Thanks again for your time, and we'll catch you all on the next podcast.
Our final podcast guest for Series 2 is John Atkinson. John is the Human Resources Manager for the MG Kalis Group. Thanks to John for his time and for all of those who participated in Series 2 of these podcasts. Over to John.
Today I have a guest from WA. He is currently the Human Resources Manager for MG Kalis Group. Can I welcome to the podcast John Atkinson? How are you, John?
Hi, Eric. Very well, thanks.
John, thanks for joining me, mate. So let's get into some of these questions here. And the first one being, what appealed to you most about the SeaSafe training?
Okay, that's an easy one, Eric. Certainly, the flexible nature of the training that SeaSafe offers. Our crew are able to download the modules either on their phone, iPad, tablet, laptop, you name it, and complete the training in their own time. And that's a benefit because, as we know, internet communications lost at sea are either non-existent or intermittent at best. So practically, I've been able to send the SeaSafe link to prospective overseas employees prior to their coming out to Australia. And the SeaSafe training is there to supplement our existing vessel safety management, induction and emergency training, but it allows our deckhands to hit the ground running when they arrive up there in Exmouth. The different video modules are relatively short and concise, so they don't lose the trainee in a lot of legalistic mumbo-jumbo. So, no, it's just a very effective form of training for us.
That's fantastic. So have you had any feedback from your skippers and crew about the SeaSafe program, mate?
Sure, yeah. Last year in May, we held a training program with approximately 20 people, including our vessel masters and first mates, basically in the conference room at the Exmouth Shire. It was very well received, all of those in attendance. Free coffee and food aside, the fishermen provided a great deal of positive feedback, and it certainly helped keep safety at sea, front of mind for the start of their prawn trawl season last year. The overwhelming majority stated that, they were better prepared to deal with emergencies at sea and reducing risks. Steve Ayres flew up to our site and conducted the training for some hand-picked modules that we had pre-selected with Steve prior to him heading up there. So we covered things such as hierarchy of controls, man overboard, fire at sea, abandoned ship, manual handling, PPE, fatigue awareness, and electrical safety at sea. So there's a good suite that we were able to choose from.
Okay, and just finally, there are now trawl-specific modules available. Would you see that as being useful in the future in the mix of training that you've got through CSAFE?
Yeah, absolutely, Eric. As we know, you know, the varying fishing sector vessels are all configured differently. So to have a trawl-specific module would have greatly increased relevance to our vessel crews. There's the obvious benefit of our fishermen just being able to see and understand how certain safety practices apply specifically to them on a day-to-day basis. So, no, that would absolutely be a win for our group, for sure.
No worries. Look, John, I appreciate your time on this. I know things are a bit crazy with COVID-19. So for those listening, I've been speaking to John Atkinson, Human Resources Manager for the MG Carless Group. Thanks again, John.
My pleasure, Eric. Anytime.
Cheers, mate. Thanks very much.
This has been the Seafood Industry Safety Initiative set of podcasts. My name is Eric Perez. Thanks again for your time, and we'll catch you all on the next podcast.